You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Kohler Company's plan to build a high-end golf course on the Sheboygan Lakeshore remains a hotly debated issue in the area 2 years after the project was proposed. A WPR reporter brings us up to speed on the latest developments. Now, the Trump administration began the formal process to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord earlier this month, a move that's been criticized by environmentalists around the world who are concerned about climate change. Meanwhile, millennials face a dilemma, according to our next guest. He says they could be the first to experience the worst impacts of climate change, and they're also the last generation that might be able to do something about it. In a new book, he tells the stories of young people who are on the front lines. Jeff Dembicki reports for the TAI and has written for Vice, the New York Times, and the Atlantic. He's the author of the new book, Are We Screwed? How a New Generation is Fighting to Survive Climate Change. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, let's talk about that opening question in the title of your book, and this is kind of what motivated you to write about it. Are millennials screwed by climate change?
I mean, there seems to be more and more evidence these days that we are, but I don't want to go totally over to that hopeless position. And a lot of my thinking that got me started in writing this book came out of a study in 2015 done by the climate scientist James Hansen. And I'm radically oversimplifying the study, but basically what he said was, worst case scenario, if we don't change the amount of carbon dioxide we're emitting into the atmosphere, all the planet's coastal cities could flood by as early as 2065. You would have mass migrations of people that would make the Syrian refugee crisis look quaint, and you could potentially have the collapse of civilization. And I know that that sounds like, you know, fairly extreme language, but for someone like myself, who is about 28, 29 when I read that study, that's a scenario I have to take seriously because it could occur in my lifetime when I'm in my mid-80s or so. You know, obviously, people of older generations will be experiencing impacts from climate change, but some of those really scary apocalyptic scenarios are more likely to occur in the lifetime of millennials or anyone younger. So that was part of the reason I wanted to write this book and present a new perspective.
And you worry about the idea of despair, that if millennials look at this and think it's a done deal, they are the last chance to do anything about it, and they might not.
Yeah, exactly. And too much fear and too much despair is ultimately disempowering. And so I wanted to counter those negative feelings. And obviously these days with Donald Trump in the White House and with a majority of Republicans in Congress denying the existence of climate change, it's easy to feel despair. But during the research of this book, I met many people my own age who were doing things that gave me hope for the future. And I can give you a couple examples of their stories if you'd like.
Actually, I want to get into their individual stories in a minute. But big picture, you start off looking at some survey data. Do millennials think about climate change differently than older generations?
I think that they do, and I went through dozens and dozens of surveys from organizations such as the Pew Research Center, and basically what the evidence shows is that not only are millennials on average more concerned about climate change for some of the reasons that I discussed, but they're more open to the solutions that could fix climate change. There was an interesting survey I read a couple years ago which showed a very noticeable generation gap on this issue, particularly in implementing more clean energy in the state of Texas. And it found that younger respondents were much more open to the idea. They saw climate change as a way to, they saw climate solutions as a way to help the environment and grow the economy at the same time. And they did so in larger numbers than people who are older than them.
And one interesting study, I can't remember which one it was you referred to, but, you know, 2/3 or so of millennials believe that climate change was happening because of human causes, something like that. But then something like 80-some percent said, yeah, we should be doing something to cut carbon emissions anyway. So even maybe for some millennials who aren't sure about the science or sure that the science is settled, they think it's enough of a risk that we should do something anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something you witness across all age groups. You know, people might not have very clear ideas about exactly what the scientific causes of climate change are, but they know that there's a problem, and they know that it's good to take that problem seriously and do something proactive about it. I mean, you get in your car every day, and you know in the back of your mind that you could crash your car, even though that's an unlikely scenario, and yet you take precautions all the way. And I think a lot of people would like to see that same approach being taken in regards to climate change. However, at the moment, our political leaders don't seem very interested in doing that.
Talking to Jeff Dembicki, author of the book, Are We Screwed? How a New Generation is Fighting to Survive Climate Change, looking at millennials and how they're responding to a changing climate. And Jeff, most of your book is looking at particular millennials as examples of the kind of actions that are being taken. Let's start with a former Harvard student, Chloe Maxman, working on divestment, I believe, from fossil fuel companies.
Yeah, and she was a really interesting example of the kind of huge systemic changes that can be achieved by, you know, a fairly small group of people working together. So back in 2012, Chloe and some of her fellow students at Harvard got together, and they created a fossil fuel divestment campaign at Harvard. And basically, the intent of the campaign was to pressure Harvard to sell off its investments in oil, coal, and gas companies. Harvard was talking a lot about its commitment to sustainability, and so Chloe and the other students were urging Harvard to sort of live up to those commitments fully and stop funding companies that were making climate change worse. So this started as a very small organization. It was just a few dozen students at first, and other colleges were starting similar efforts. Within a few years, those efforts had spread to hundreds of colleges and universities around the world. And by last December, I believe, they had influenced $5 trillion worth of financial assets worldwide. And so obviously, that's a huge impact created in just a few short years. And it just shows the power of actually going out and putting your concern about the environment or any other political issue into action and pushing for change.
I'd like to meet another person you introduce in your book, Ella Maya Tailfeathers. Can you tell us about her and the work she did?
Yeah, she's an Indigenous filmmaker based in Canada, and she's descended from the Blackfoot First Nation and also from the Sami peoples of Northern Europe. They're another Indigenous community. And so she got concerned about some drilling that was being done on the Blackfoot Reserve in Alberta. And so with a few other women who were older than her, she went and protested the drilling and ended up being thrown in jail for a night. And so she reflected a lot on her experiences and decided to sort of unpack what she had gone through by making films about it. And so this is another example of someone who is looking at climate change from a very unique perspective and is feeling the urgency of it and is dealing with it in a creative way. And I think that's very typical of what you see among millennials. You often think, you know, to deal with climate change, we have to change our light bulbs or ride our bicycles more or do whatever at the individual level. But so many of the people I met while researching this book were taking new and novel approaches to the issue and were creating a lot of interest and political and economic change in the process.
Yeah, you close your book after all meeting all these people. You give kind of a guide for millennials to get active on climate. What kind of things can any millennial listening do?
Well, it's not just millennials either. I intended the guide to be of use to anyone who's concerned about the environment or concerned about, you know, creating progressive change in an era when Trump and the other people in power right now in Washington don't seem all that interested in it. And to me, the most effective solution also ended up being the simplest, And that was when people actually go out and vote for people, for politicians who are promising bold and aggressive action on climate change. That can have a huge impact. Just to give one example, in Canada, where I grew up, in 2015, there was a national election, and for nearly a decade, we had a prime minister named Stephen Harper, who was a close ally of oil and gas companies, and he pulled Canada out of climate change treaties. And in that election, there was a surge of voting from young voters, particularly in their mid-20s. Voting was up 18%, and as a result, Stephen Harper was voted out of office, and Canada now has a new leader, Justin Trudeau, who's bringing in a price on carbon dioxide. So it shows you how powerful it can be to go out and actually exercise your democratic rights. Of course, as we saw with the U.S. presidential election, there was a huge amount of interest among millennials in Bernie Sanders, but that didn't translate into actual voting on election day. And some people have speculated that if more young people had gone out and voted for Hillary Clinton, then Donald Trump might not be president.
We're talking about millennials and the shift of generational values when it comes to climate change. Jeff Demicki is with us. He's the author of the new book, Are We Screwed? How a New Generation is Fighting to Survive Climate Change. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234, especially interested to hear from the subject of the book, millennials. Let us know, are you worried about climate change? Are you taking action in some way, or do you feel doomed? The future holds bad things for you because of climate change. There's not much you could do about it, even if you wanted to. And people of any generation, call in and let us know your thoughts on this as well. 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We pick up our conversation now about millennials and climate change with Jeff Demicki, the author of Are We Screwed? How a New Generation is Fighting to Survive Climate Change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think millennials will be able to do something about the effects of climate change? Younger people, millennials out there listening, do you worry about your future because of climate change? Are you taking some kind of action based on that? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jeff, I want to hear another story about the people you talk to, millennials taking action. An artist who was drawing attention to issues related to climate change and fossil fuels. Can you tell us about him?
There was a young person I talked to, a Canadian who now lives in Brooklyn, and he grew up in Fort McMurray, which is the heart of Canada's tar sands, one of the biggest oil operations in the world. And when he was growing up, he struggled for many years about whether he wanted to work in the oil industry, like a lot of his family had, or be a conceptual artist. And those seem like two, you know, very opposed choices. But he went back and forth for a while, and eventually he decided that he didn't just want to work for a paycheck. He wanted his work to have a wider meaning, and so he ended up moving to Brooklyn and now works as an artist. And so people might think, oh, why is this one story important? But I think it's emblematic of a wider shift in generational values. And what I found while I was researching my book was that millions and millions of young people are rejecting jobs that are only based on paychecks and don't have a larger consideration about their impact on society. And this is creating a crisis right now in the oil and gas industry. A bunch of people who work in the oil and gas industry are baby boomers, and they're set to retire soon. And when they retire, they're going to be bringing all of their technical knowledge and expertise with them. So the oil and gas industry is desperately trying to hire millennials to replace that lost knowledge. And they're having a hard time doing it because of the shift I described. And one organization estimated a few years ago that if the oil and gas industry can't hire more millennials, it's going to potentially block $100 billion worth of new oil and gas projects. So that's pretty significant.
I want to bring in a caller now. Heidi is with us in Merton. Heidi, hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Heidi?
My daughter is a millennial, and she attends UW-Madison and is in environmental science on her last year. And she, since her freshman year, has been telling us, basically, environmentally, we're screwed. And due to that, she is never going to have any children because she doesn't want to bring them into a world that we've totally destroyed. And she's sure our kids won't be able to enjoy anything that she's enjoyed.
Heidi, thanks for the call. Jeff, do you think that's a common fear for the future? I mean, we've heard from other people on the show who've brought up that point.
Yeah, and that's something I hear quite about, too. You know, there's no easy answer to that question, but I would say that if you decide to bring kids into this world, just teach them to be aware. Teach them to be aware of the challenges our society faces, and more importantly, empower them with the tools to create a better society. We're treated to a lot of messages of doom and gloom these days, and rightly so. A lot of the environmental news is bad, but there's so much positive news, too, that doesn't get reported. For example, for the last few years, there's been more renewable energy installed worldwide than fossil fuel energy. Coal use in China is declining so fast that some people think China might be able to meet its Paris Climate Treaty targets a decade early. You have coal companies going bankrupt. You have new industries being born in states like California. So there's a lot of positive news out there, and I think if you do want to bring kids into this world, it's not a totally hopeless situation.
Heidi, thanks for that call. Back to our callers now with Emily in River Hills. Emily, hi.
Yes, hi. This is a great topic, and I'm kind of borderline millennial. I'm a little older, but I'm 36, and we have two kids, a four-year-old and an eight-month-old, and I've really taken it on to try to battle the environmental issues home. You know, we compost, we have raised beds. My daughter understands, like, you know, how things grow, kind of, you know, being supportive also of our local farmers, but also being more politically active. I've joined the Committee of Environment and Tree Board at the Village Hall in River Hills, along with in Whitefish Bay, which is our neighboring city. I actually just finished meeting with the Department of Public Works, and we're trying to figure out if we can do composting in Whitefish Bay and figuring out if we can make that more accessible for families. So I think, as you say, you know, as we bring our children into the world, what can we do? I mean, it's overwhelming. So just doing these things at home and trying to be more involved locally is where we have to keep, you know, pushing forward.
Emily, thanks for the call. And Jeff, she hit 2 points on your action plan: get involved in local politics and compost more.
Yeah, and I think both of those are really important. And I would just like to spend a little bit more time talking about the political side of things, because I think that's crucial to all of this. I've spent a lot of time studying the other side, people who deny the existence of climate change. And what's surprising is that when you actually look at how the numbers break down in the U.S., the diehard climate change deniers only represent about 10% of the population. And yet they've managed to wield disproportionate influence on our political system. Meanwhile, the people who are very concerned about climate change, who are composting like you and doing lots of other things, that's about 20% of the U.S. population. And then there's a whole bunch of people in the middle who are either undecided or don't really give the issue much thought. To date, that 20% who really wants action haven't really been organized and haven't wielded their political power in the same way that the deniers do. And I think there's a huge opportunity to show people how much power they have and to show them what kind of changes they can create when they organize politically and push back against their political leaders who don't want to do anything. And that was, I hope, one of the main messages of my book.
Emily, thanks for calling. Mark is with us now in Appleton. Mark, hi.
Hi. I agree wholeheartedly that it's a problem of individual political responsibility for all of us that use use fossil fuels. And I'm a boomer. And to me, one thing that's been overlooked that I struggle with, that I've got a writing disability to write letters and get something done with the environmental groups, to put pressure on them to pool their resources and tackle the problem of how to win hearts and minds by establishing a research lab, not a think tank, but an interdisciplinary lab, you know, modeled on what Thomas Edison did. He invented
Mark, we're just about out of time, but Mark's saying, Jeff, environmental groups need to do more, pool their resources and research, and I guess win people over on this.
Yeah, and I think there's always room to do that, and there's always room to make people aware of all the positive changes and technologies that already exist, and to build alliances with the business community, for example. If you look at Tesla, for instance, it has a higher market valuation right now than General Motors. So I'm speaking here about electric cars, which would obviously reduce our dependence on oil quite a bit. So I think when you have business moving in this direction, you have environmental groups continuing to put pressure on our leaders, and you have a huge opportunity to get regular people more organized and involved in politics on this. I do think at the end of the day, there's a lot of reason for hope, and I would not say that we are totally screwed yet.
We'll leave it there. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Jeff Dembicki, author of the new book, Are We Screwed? How a New Generation is Fighting to Survive Climate Change. Writing about how millennials are dealing with the possible consequences of climate change and trying to prevent them. Still time to share your thoughts and experiences. You can do that over at the Central Time Facebook page.